Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 291.
This week on the podcast, the Trump administration finds new depths of cruelty and blames the notable cruel person, Jesus.
Plus, Brain Trust Live won the California primaries.
And Donald Trump at the G7 is a cartoon toddler from the 1950s.
The White House tried their hand at a North Korea-style propaganda film and did a passable job at authoritarian propaganda art.
And hey guys, you want to visit Paul Manafort in VIP jail? We've got the deets.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Happy Father's Day.
Yes.
We've had our first two-week sojourn.
Yes.
So we're going to be bringing you the news from both of the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
Mostly the main stories.
Yeah.
But we have been Insta-storying about the non-main stories over on social. So
that's right.
Go follow us on social.
Yeah.
And check out the fun news.
That's right.
This is going to be fun news, too.
Yes, of course.
But we begin with Puerto Rico, as with every week, so that's not as fun.
It might
take
us a while to get to the fun news.
Right. It picks up, you guys. We don't have any real updates about Puerto Rico other than the fact that there was an article a story that PBS did about how basically at this point nobody in Puerto Rico knows what to believe about anything anymore and is like distrusting any official information about what happened. And so suddenly we're all pretending like, can you believe suddenly no one is trusting the official story anymore?
Yes.
Like, yep.
Yes.
That's because the story has been a lie.
That's right.
So we don't have any updates about the power situation there now, but we remain a nation hurtling towards hurricane season.
Yes.
So
I think, aren't we officially there?
I think we're in it. I think June 1st
I think June.
Beginning
of
it. But so in any case, we remain a nation that is likely to experience similar issues. And there were also some articles this week that specifically noted how many schools in Puerto Rico have been closed because of lack of funding.
Sure.
I think like 300 schools have been closed. It's been a big problem there. And we're talking about cutting more school spending with our austerity plan that La Junta recommended.
That's right. Yeah.
But the big story of this week was, and last week as well, really, was the story about these migrant families being separated.
Yeah.
Because it's so fucking cruel.
Beyond.
It's like almost unconscionable. I think part of it takes a while for the story to sink in. And part of it is you're just like, do people do this? Would people do this?
Yes,
apparently.
They do now.
The Trump people would do this.
That's right. Yes.
Basically, the U.S. government stepped up their separation of families who are either seeking asylum or crossing the border illegally for other reasons in the last few months. So in the last, between October of last year and May of this year, something like 2,700 children were split from their parents, but almost 2,000 of them were in that final month between April 18th and May 31st, so the final month and
a half. Yeah, so we're really ramping it up.
So it recently ramped up extensively. That's about 45 children a day being taken from their parents.
Yeah.
The Trump administration claims it's a temporary measure in response to a temporary surge that, you know, that we're using as a deterrent. Now, there's a few issues with that. One being that these, quote, temporary surge is actually normal levels. They dipped last year.
Yeah.
And so it's a surge in the sense that it's more than last year, but last year was unusually low.
Yeah.
But
what the fuck kind of deterrent is that?
Well, it's not. How could that be? I mean,
I think it probably is.
No, they have numbers that show that it has not been much of a deterrent.
Well,
so
maybe not of late because it was not a news story. I
don't see how people in a desperate situation have the choice.
Yeah.
So if it is a deterrent to, because it's meant to be a deterrent to people seeking asylum, not just people crossing the border illegally. People seeking asylum are seeking asylum because shit has gone haywire in their home country.
That's right.
So they're not seeking asylum because they just think it would be fun to have more access to McDonald's than they currently do. They're seeking asylum because they have a dramatic political instability in their home country and they need somewhere to go.
Yeah.
So
isn't Donald Trump as president enough of a deterrent that we need?
Right.
As opposed to having to rip children away from families. Go ahead, because we'll tell you exactly how this sort of, like, got started.
Yeah, because I wanted to talk a little bit about
editorialize
how this policy even exists.
Yeah.
Because it sounds crazy.
Right, and it's not, they keep telling us that it's law, and it's not really.
No.
It's not a law that anyone has to be following, certainly.
There's
no
law.
It's not immigration law, certainly.
They are making choices that are forcing them to follow different laws than they would normally follow in cases like this.
Correct, yes.
But these are choices they're making. So basically, the policy is not we rip children away from their parents. The policy is couched in another policy. And for context, first-time border crossers usually don't do prison time. They wait in an immigration center for a hearing. They go to like a big mass assembly line hearing. They are sentenced to time served as long as they plead guilty. And they get deported or they get either, you know, ushered through the system and wherever they're supposed to go.
Yeah.
It works differently for people, for migrants who are referred for criminal prosecution.
Yeah.
The thing is that now we're referring a lot more of them to criminal prosecution.
Yes.
So basically, they get sent to a federal jail. They get brought before a federal judge a few weeks later to see if they're going to get additional prison time.
Yeah.
The thing is, you can't keep a child with you in federal prison, and that's why the kids are being separated from
and
the parents.
That's the, and they keep saying this because I heard at least a while ago, you know, somebody sort of, it might have even been Sarah Sanders, basically saying, like, you know, this happens in America every day because, like, you know, people are arrested and then parents go to jail and the kids are taken from the parents. But they aren't taken away from the parents and then literally, like, locked away and, like, stacked on top of each other, like, in a warehouse somewhere. Like, that, which is what's happening.
Well, because the problem is, so the children who are taken away in a circumstance like this are handed over to the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, to be put in either government custody or foster care.
Right.
ORR, which is the, or that agency's acronym, is massively overstretched.
Yeah.
They have been for years.
Yeah.
And so they don't...
And now they're even more so because, and, like, of this recent surge. So they don't know what to do with these kids.
So this surge has created, like, a huge number of logistical obstacles for them. And not only that, inside of the detention centers where the adults are being held, they are being mistreated by Border Patrol agents pretty frequently. A lot of them say that they were told that their kid was just being taken away for, like, a bath or to be questioned, and then they disappeared. Pramila Jayapal, the representative from Washington, who used to be the Seattle mayor, right? Or no, the Seattle City Council person, she visited a federal prison and said that some of the mothers said that they were being told by Border Patrol agents that their families wouldn't exist anymore, that they would never see their children again. Like,
but don't worry, guys. They're all pro-family, the Republicans. Very pro-family.
Very. Well, and the
pro-family, pro-children, pro-life, all of that.
All
of
they're pro it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The problem is that in some of these cases, and a vast majority of these cases are people who have just crossed illegally, but a bunch of these cases are also people seeking asylum. And the reason that they're going after people seeking asylum is, and it's about, for some reason, they're just, like, inexplicably doing this to, like, 30% of the families that cross the border, but, like, not all of them, but it's a larger number than, it's a growing number. You may remember that the Obama administration attempted to respond to the 2014 sort of fake crisis, because obviously this has been a crisis for a while, by putting a bunch of families in immigration detention, and then federal court said you can't just house these people in detention centers indefinitely without cause, and so they had to release them, and then a lot of them disappeared when they were trying to show up, you know, instead of showing up for their court dates, which is what I would do in that situation as well. This is the catch and release thing that the GOP is always talking about, because the federal courts ruled that you can't just imprison people in immigration detention centers while they're awaiting their trials for no reason.
So what we're supposed to do with them.
Exactly. And these, and for asylum seekers have different rights than just people who have crossed the borders illegally. So asylum seekers, you're not allowed to deport them. You can't send them back to their home country. Right. And there are laws that prevent you, international laws as well as U.S. laws, that prevent you from detaining them forever.
Right. So, and I believe what we're also doing is sort of like more strictly enforcing sort of like our asylum, the things that sort of like we use to decide whether we're going to give someone asylum or not.
Yes.
Because there are laws about this, and I heard Jeff Sessions speaking about this.
Yes.
We'll get to him in a little bit. But it's sort of basically like talking about like the reasons that we have in the past offered asylum to people have become too broad, basically. Mm. Like that our asylum laws are supposed to sort of like only, you know, they're only supposed to be meant for, you know, XYZ. Over time, we started just, like, giving asylum to any old person, and now we're, not going to be doing that any longer. I would assume that he was making half of that up. But also, like, I think to a degree, though, also, that is what they're doing, just in terms of sort of, like, more strictly sort of, like, enforcing, like, what at least he deems to be the asylum laws.
Yeah, and specifically credible asylum, because what they're doing is they're stepping up the detention of asylum seekers in, and also immigrants in general, in federal prisons as a way of skirting the laws that prevent you from just like housing asylum seekers in jail forever.
Right.
They're prosecuting them for federal crimes instead.
Right.
And once you've prosecuted them for federal crimes, you can, because they've committed a crime, they are no longer able to be, you know, governed by the laws that protect asylum seekers.
Right.
So, and then that's what allows them to ship
the children away. Right, of course.
Yes. So what happens to the children is they end up in, we've been seeing a lot of news about these massive immigration detention centers that they've ended all the, up putting these children in.
All the Democratic lawmakers are basically, like, trying to bust into them and sort of, like, not being allowed to go in, and rightly so, because they're, it's, like,
it's crazy.
It's so crazy. Yeah, I mean.
Well, and there, you know, you've I'm sure heard reports of, like, the fact that, you know, even when they put them in foster care, there's been issues with them vetting the foster care. There were accusations that a bunch of teenagers were given to labor traffickers, you know, that some of them are being released to family and then they can't be found again. Although they think a lot of that is probably because people go off the grid once they've been in that system.
Yeah.
But the real problem that they're facing is usually the kids that ORR deals with are kids that cross the border themselves. So they're old enough to have made the crossing by themselves.
Right.
So they're like on the 12 to teenager.
Right. They're not used to getting children who got ripped away, you know, while breastfeeding.
They're not used to changing diapers. You know, they're not used to they're not used to kids who need care.
Right.
And so not only are they being stretched because this is not really in their wheelhouse and they already have too many kids in their care.
Yeah.
But also they are having, they're putting kids with foster parents who aren't necessarily experienced in dealing with kids who've been ripped away from their parents.
Right.
That's very different than losing your parents.
True.
That's being forcibly ripped away from your parents in a traumatic scene where you know your parents are out there and you don't know if you'll ever see them again.
Yeah.
Is very different.
Yeah.
Especially if you're old enough to understand what was going on.
And it's also, you know, it's really sort of, these policies sort of like put in place sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, just in terms of, you know, Trump wants to talk about how, you know, terrible all of these immigrants are. You know, they're rapists and murderers and murderers and things like that. And I'm not saying all of these children are going to end up that, because I don't think that. But, like, certainly I would assume that your chances go up of being one of those things when you have been ripped away from your parents when you were a small child.
Treated and then by this thrown, government.
And then, right, exactly. Like, thrown into a warehouse and, you know, like, or put into foster care or, you know, labor traffickers,
sex traffickers. Like, I mean, who knows where these kids are ending up?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that is the other thing too. It's just sort of like.
So it used to be their mandate is to try to either reunite them with their parents or put them with a close family member if they can. And it used to be that in most cases, the kids that were under their care were successfully reunited with either their parents or close family.
Yeah.
In this case, it doesn't seem like the Trump administration has any real incentive or plan to work to reunite these families. So some families have gotten reunited, but there are bigger issues with, like, for example, parents in these federal prisons and in these immigration detention centers are being told, like, oh, there's a number you can call to find your parents but they don't have access to phones in these facilities.
Sure.
Like, there are all of these additional obstacles to bringing the families back together, one being that ORR has no manpower left to do any of this.
Yeah.
So the whole system's in chaos, basically. They have all these kids. They've taken them away from their parents for dubious reasons.
Yeah.
They have ripped the parent, you know, they've stripped the parents of the ability to apply for asylum, even when most of them are coming from these Central American nations that are too dangerous to be in.
Yeah.
That's why they came.
Yeah.
And we're just creating a bunch of displaced kids, which is really the cruelest thing that we could possibly do with this scenario.
Yeah.
These are already kids that had to leave their homes because of violence.
Yes.
And now we have violently ripped them away from their parents and put them in unfamiliar circumstances and warehoused them.
Yeah.
In order to deter other people from coming?
Yeah. Yes. Apparently.
So, in any case, the other thing Trump keeps saying is that there's a Democratic law.
Yeah, the Democrats won't come to the table.
That's
and
right.
Fix this mess that they've created.
He's blaming it on a mystery law that that apparently, you know, was passed by Democrats to charge asylum seekers in that allows him to charge asylum seekers in criminal court rather than waiting to see if they qualify for asylum, because that's kind of what they're doing to cut down on the asylum seeker situation. The thing is, the law he's talking about, the one that grants extra protections to families and unaccompanied children, the one that he's trying to skirt by prosecuting people as criminals, isn't a Democratic law because it was passed in 2008 by George Bush.
Ah, sure.
And the restriction on detaining families is a result of federal litigation. It's not a law.
Right.
I mean, it's a law, but it's not a law that was passed by Democrats.
Nobody passed it. Right?
So.
Wrong. False.
Wrong.
Fake news.
False.
Yeah.
And it's, according to evidence, not really deterring people from coming. And if it does deter people from coming, is this a cost worth it?
No. And that's the thing. Like you said earlier, like if the choice is maybe make it into the U.S. and get asylum, or for sure die in your home country.
Right.
Then the risk of having your child taken away is...
It's not enough.
It's not enough to deter you because you're all dying in your home country. Yeah.
And they were asked in early May when they rolled out the zero tolerance policy if it was working, because they had done a pilot program before this. And they said, yes, our pilot program was successful and it reduced border crossings by 64%. And then they were unable to produce any evidence about
that. That sounds right.
So they just lied about
that.
They
just made it up.
Yeah, they made it up. But it also, they've been sending mixed signals about how someone can legally seek asylum without putting themselves at risk of being put in jail.
Yes.
So
right.
There has to be a way for people to seek asylum. And if they get denied the asylum, then maybe we send them, you know, deport them or whatever.
Right.
But there has to be a way for them to get through that due process without us jailing them and taking away their children.
That's
where what Brent was saying about Jeff Sessions saying that he suspects that most asylum claims are fraudulent is so troubling.
Yes.
Because it means that they're, first of all, they're not giving asylum seekers a chance to have their cases heard in a fair manner anyway.
Right.
But even if they were, they are basically sending a signal that it's not worth even trying to seek asylum legally.
Yes.
You might as well just fucking cross the border and take your chances.
Right.
Because they're as likely to prosecute you for giving yourself up as they are if you just sneak into the country and disappear.
Right. Because I think that what we had sort of in the past done was basically like acknowledged that these people were in, could have asylum just because of all of the violence in their home country.
Yeah.
And so like that it was necessary for them to leave. But basically what they're saying now is that like just because there's violence in your city doesn't mean that you can seek asylum here. Like you have to prove that you are in some sort of like
specific personal
danger as opposed to just sort of like, oh, like people are dying in my city.
Yeah.
So that is sort of like where that's what the change is there, basically.
One notable thing is that federal courts have ruled that it's illegal to keep an immigrant in detention just to deter people. That it has to be on the basis of their case. You can't just keep immigrants in detention just to show them.
Yeah, that's not what we do in America.
No. I mean, it's literally what we're doing in America,
right.
But it's not theoretically what we do.
Correct.
The ACLU has a bunch of cases already in the courts about this, but most of them deal with whether or not the government is obligated to reunite these children with their families.
Mm.
So, like, the greatest win at the moment that we can hope for is that they are obligated.
And
the thing is, they have no way of doing it.
And there probably isn't any law that says that there are, because who would have ever thought that we would have needed that in the first place?
Right. There are so many things
Well, there's no law that says we have to put their parents back with their children. No, of course there isn't.
No,
because, like, because there's
no
law saying
that
we had to rip them apart. So, like,
you
don't need the law to fix it. Like,
and
just do it because you should.
Yeah,
like,
because that's human.
Yes.
Because that's what nice people do.
Yes.
And being nice is important.
That's right.
People forgetting that all over.
All over.
but that's one of the things that you can do to be a nice person.
Yeah.
To be a good neighbor in the broad sense.
Yeah.
But so Congress is not likely to be able to deal with this legislatively because they can't even agree on DACA, and that has support of basically everyone. But this is similarly
I think there was there have been some Republicans who have not been happy about this.
Yes.
Which is, you know, gives me minimal amounts of hope.
Right.
And also the evangelical community is not super into this.
It
shouldn't be.
No human should be into this.
Many of them are.
Yeah.
But I have heard a lot of interviews with sort of like leaders of that movement.
Well, there have been some pundits
who are and pundits. Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I think that. But just recently, Trump said that he wasn't going to sign because they supposedly had some bill that was going to immigration bill that was like that Paul Ryan is basically out there selling, and Trump was like, "No, I'm not going to sign it." Yeah. So. They have no interest in fixing this, and they no longer can. And if that's the case, if he's just not going to sign a bill, then that you can no longer blame that on the Democrats, which they can't anyway. But like, it makes it much more harder now if it's a bill that Paul Ryan sent to you that was a compromise bill that everybody in the House signed.
I guarantee he will try to say that they didn't convince him hard enough to sign
it. Yes, probably.
He's tried that before.
Yeah, he has.
There have been, I mean, there were other bills that he wasn't going to sign. You know, the tax bill he wasn't going to sign for a while, and it was because they hadn't worked hard enough to convince him to sign it.
Right, yes.
Or like whatever. You know, it was like, it's always other people's fault.
Yes.
Brent, that's one thing that we should agree on.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's been sort of gripping the nation.
Yeah.
Because it's just too horrifying.
Yes, it is.
And also, it's another one of these moments where you're like, is this what we are now? Like, the Trump administration is filled with so many of these moments.
Yeah. Well, and we've had, it has. And that is what is so upsetting, too. Because, like, besides the fact that, like, this just sort of like plays into the whole sort of, I mean, this is the worst of it, I would say probably, but this is just like a heightened example of all of these videos that you see where, you know, you've got just somebody in a grocery store line yelling at someone because they're, you know, not white. Or, yeah, you know, there was just on Huffington Post today, there was video of people getting on a bus in Maine and the bus driver saying you can't get on this bus if you're not an American citizen. And there was an ICE agent standing there, you know, like, and also just like people not being nice to each other. Like,
yeah,
like that people is like not being nice this, to each other. This just like this is the sort of like peak of all of that, basically. And it's just sort of like it shouldn't be who we've decided that we're going to become. Yeah.
It's who you become when 12 men control the entire economy and no one feels any hope that anything could ever change.
Yeah.
That's what you become.
Yeah.
You become Lord of the Flies. This is a Lord of the Flies style move.
Yeah, it is.
Because these are people.
They are.
Some of them are children.
Yes.
All the children are children. That's for sure.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the coverage of it, I think, has been truly horrifying in a way that I think will make it electorally unacceptable. I think other administration would try this because of how unacceptable it would be. The Trump administration doesn't seem deterred by things like that because they're probably going to use it to cover for some ridiculous thing that they're up to.
Probably.
But I do feel like as much as we may not ever see the kind of comeuppance that we want, this will feed into the way that people consider their votes during the midterms.
Oh, I think so too. And I think, you know, in going back to Jeff Sessions just briefly, I think it was very calculated on his part when he said that it's very biblical to follow the law.
Yeah.
Because I think that they were seeing the writing on the wall here with some of the, you know, you can say all of the awful things about the evangelical community that you want, and I'm here to listen
and
to
them. Right.
And they're right. But this is not, no matter how horrible this group of Christians is 99.9% of the time, this is not what they're looking to have gotten themselves wrapped up in.
No. This is pretty much violates the most basic tenets of the system that they believe that they are following.
Correct. So I think it's even if they're not as being as vocal about it as they should be, which they're not, it's certainly a huge turnoff.
Yeah.
So anybody who is favoring this going into November, I think is really going to be up shit creek big time.
Yeah. Well, and no one's going to be able to say they're favoring it. I think it will, it's got two
right. But effects. Even if you didn't speak out on it, if I were a Democrat and the Republican has not held a press conference about it yet, I would, make hay out
and
of
I also think that based on how many people have, apropos of nothing, mentioned this to me.
Oh, yeah.
Who are not necessarily people that...
This is a story that everyone knows about.
Everyone's talking about it.
Because they're talking about it on the late night shows. That, you know, there was a... Stephen Colbert just sort of, like, took it down earlier.
My mother calls me every day to tell me how concerned everyone in their small town in upstate New York is about it.
And Jerry Nadler went today. Did you see that? Or yesterday or something? He was one of the congresspeople that went to one of these...
Yeah. Style them, you guys. We're the best. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But yeah. No, it's a... It's a story of sort of that has reached the kind of hysterical proportions, not funny hysterical, but just hysteria hysterical, that I think makes it a huge electoral boondoggle, especially because it's so close to a midterm election.
Boondoggle. Been a while.
It's one of our words.
Yeah.
We brought it back. we lost it for a while and we brought it back.
That's right. Yeah.
But I just don't see how this, that Trump's sort of advocacy for this program...
Yeah.
Because he has been advocating for it, and then also claiming that other people not stopping him from doing it is
it's
the problem.
Other people's fault. Yeah.
Well, that's what he says about everything.
Well,
and I'm sure that 25% of the country is with him on it. Because 25% of the country is not thinking right now.
That's correct. Yes.
I'm not going to go so far as to claim that they couldn't think if they put their hearts into it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to suggest that at this moment,
they're not doing it.
Yeah. But in the last 2 weeks, we also, because it's primary season, had a slew of primaries.
Yeah, including ours.
Including
California.
Ours.
Yeah.
And while that was last week, we are going to tell you all about it because...
Yeah, you might not know.
Because it's great.
And the other thing that I was thinking earlier today is, you know what? It's still newsworthy because, God bless California, 2 weeks later, we don't know the results of some of these races.
Nope.
We know at least that, thankfully, in all of those districts, we're going to have a Democrat on them.
Right.
But we're still counting votes.
Yeah.
That's right. 2 weeks later, still counting votes.
California, man. That's what
it.
We do.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, all of those seven Hillary districts got a Democrat.
We don't know. In a few of them, we don't know which Democrat it is.
And in some of them, it was real under the wire.
Yes.
It was not what you would hope for in terms of a result. No. And also, we don't know which whether they got the right Democrat in any of them.
Correct.
That's
but at least there will be one.
Exactly.
Yes.
We also got DeLeon in.
Yeah.
Which was also right under the wire. He only got about 11% of the vote. We need to fix that, you guys.
We need to fix that. And we're taking that on, by the way.
That's going to be our our summer mission.
Be on the
lookout for that. But yeah, so that's an uphill battle, but at least provides us with the conversation that we want to have during this election.
Yeah.
Newsom.
Right. And I feel regards to this story, too, I was excited because, like, you and I had that debate on the last podcast about what we should be doing in this race, whether we should be voting for Newsom or John Cox. And we disagreed, and we both got what we wanted. So I can feel like, I feel like everybody's happy here.
Yeah. About the only way that this could go downhill is I will personally blame Brent if John Cox somehow gets elected. I don't see it happening, but I
don't either. And the thing that I will say is that I was comforted by the fact that John Cox really handed Antonio Villaraigosa his ass, not because I like John Cox, but because I feel like having been so vocal about voting for John Cox, I can safely say that that vote didn't really matter.
Right, exactly.
because Antonio Villaraigosa really stunk it up, guys.
Oh my God. You guys, so Newsom was far and away the winner by an amount that is not even worth discussing.
Yeah.
John Cox got about, 26% of the vote. Villaraigosa got like 11% of the vote.
Yeah, it was
he way weird. Underperformed. He was running neck and neck with Cox.
Supposedly in
polls,
all of the polls.
You know,
Well, and in the late polls.
Right,
early
in all the polls. I said early because I thought it would sound more impressive, but then I realized it was all the polls. But so Villaraigosa, here's what I have to say about that.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I thought everyone was vastly overestimating his support. I saw a lot of people in Southern California.
And his quality as a candidate.
Quality. I saw a lot of people in Southern California ask me, or heard a lot of people ask me if they should vote for him because he would be good for Southern California. And what I had to say to that was no.
How and why?
Right. In what context was he good for us when his only job was to represent us?
Tell me more.
Tell me more about your thoughts. Just because Newsom's from Northern California and Villaraigosa's from Southern California, so maybe he'll care about us more. But here's the thing. We are a huge voting bloc, bigger than the Bay Area. If you are running for governor in California, you have to care about Southern California.
Yes,
so I'm not worried that Newsom can't care about
us. And if you ran Southern California, then get more than 10% in a race for governor.
And that's the second point I was going to make.
Sorry.
No, he's fine. But I mean, if you... I have always thought, because he's never been popular here.
No, nobody liked him that
this
much.
This is the only place where he could be popular.
Nobody hated him.
No, but everyone felt very ambivalent about
him. He was sort of just like a serviceable hack, basically.
And I felt especially ambivalent about him in this race because he was taking on the role of the naysayer candidate.
Yes.
And I'm very against the naysayer candidate.
Yes.
Don't be the guy in the election who just tells everyone that everyone else's ideas aren't possible.
Yeah.
Have an idea. And don't have that idea be moderation.
Right.
Have a goal.
Or charter schools for everyone.
Right. Have a goal that you can have as a vision so that when you say, I want to have charter schools for everyone, it's in the interest
of
a larger vision.
He had no vision board.
No, he had no vision board, which is, as a Southern Californian, a little embarrassing for him.
I was going to say, don't you know you're supposed to have one
of
those? Exactly. He should have been secreting up a storm.
It's the only thing that makes any sense for him to do. But like, Newsom was running on things that you could reasonably say are impractical in the short term. Sure. Is single payer going to happen tomorrow? Maybe not.
No.
I would love it. I'm for it.
That's what you do, though.
Have a goal.
Yeah.
Be like, this is what I want to happen. How can we make it happen in a way? You know, how can we work towards that goal?
Yeah.
If you're the naysayer candidate, you don't. And this is what Hillary Clinton contended with. She was a naysayer candidate. She didn't have sweeping policy goals. She had moderate policy goals based on someone else's sweeping policy goals that she reluctantly adopted.
Right. Yeah.
And everyone was like, well, I guess she'll be fine.
Yeah,
and if that's your thought, and
she
then
might have been.
She might have been finer than what we have now.
That's not the way to win.
It's not the way to win.
Yeah.
And so in any case, I blame the National Party for constantly shoving Villaraigosa down our throats.
Yeah.
I think that he's their guy. And I wish that they would just realize that his own constituency doesn't like him.
Yeah.
And they should just get him out of town.
Yeah. Well, you and I were talking after he did so poorly here that I think that was bad enough, and also other lost races, and it's been so long since he was even the mayor here anyway. I don't see how he
can possibly
runs for anything at least statewide really ever again.
No.
I mean, I just don't see I don't know what it would be. I don't know where the votes are.
Maybe get elected to city council.
Yes, or maybe even like if they're ends up being like an open congressional seat here, but like even that
I don't
like
see
pushing it. Like it depends on what part of the city it would be mm-hmm. from. But, like, yeah, he really needs to, I think, sort of, like, rethink electoral politics.
Yeah. Start a nonprofit. Yes. Do what Arnold Schwarzenegger did.
Yes.
Find a goal that's good for everyone. Yes. Arnold Schwarzenegger really turned it around. Because he really was a shit governor.
He was a real shit governor.
You yep. recall before Jerry Brown that California was just hurtling from crisis to crisis at every turn?
Yeah.
That was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's right.
Jerry Brown may have been the governor that made us whole again. But yes. the person that made our state whole again really was Arnold Schwarzenegger because he instituted impartial redistricting.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And he did that for everyone. That yes. was good for everyone.
Yes.
It's good for Republicans right. and Democrats.
And
it's
he's
good
continuing
for all.
To attempt to do it for everyone all exactly. over this great nation.
So he really figured out a lane where he could do the best that he could do for everyone.
Yes.
Villaraigosa needs to do that.
Yes.
Is there,
I agree.
He is one of the most high-profile Latino yes. candidates in California. Mm-hmm. That could be great for helping promote other Latino yeah. candidates or Latina candidates or Latinx yes. candidates, whatever we're calling them out. Yeah. I mean, that could be great for helping promote Latinoex yes. candidates statewide.
Yes. Yeah.
That could be great
yep.
for national races where this thing, I mean, he could help create a real bench so that this community that makes up so much of our state yeah. has a real voice nationally yes. and so much of the country. But yep. instead, he's just busy running for office, not getting elected to anything because no one likes him. Start a nonprofit.
Yeah, do something.
Get your, you know,
yeah.
feet wet doing
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
The other news is A, Brent knew, but I found out that in San Francisco they use ranked choice voting yeah. in city elections, and I'm uh-huh. very excited about that.
Yes, and I think they have their first black woman as the mayor.
Oh, yeah,
right?
I think they.
She has a fun name too, no, like there's London like, Freed or something.
Yeah, they
like
have
that,
like a.
Or, right?
That was an interesting election. Yeah. It's created some weird alliance strategies because the combination sure. of jungle and ranked choice is wild.
Yeah.
To be having both of those on your ballot is
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
But also. Before we go into the other June 5th primary results from other states, which weren't that exciting, there is a big controversy brewing in California because we all found out that one of the props that will be on our ballot, one of the yeah. 17 props that will be on our ballot in November, yeah. is a proposition to split California into three states.
It's not going
to
pass.
Of course it's not going to pass. It's yeah. crazy. And everyone yeah. keeps being like, but do you think it will give us more electoral votes? And I keep saying,
no.
it's a ploy to get Republican
right.
It creates a Republican
say,
state.
Two of those states are lean Republican.
One
is
definitively,
solid Republican.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we exactly. lose electoral
so,
votes.
No.
So
yes,
calm yourself. And also, it basically wardens LA off into its
LA
own state.
LA off. Into, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but, it's like two giant swaths of the state and then like
and then LA.
California. And they were nice enough to just let us keep the name California.
Yeah. Well, we
like,
are.
Is it,
California.
You know, but like, yeah, it's you, when you look at the map, it's like ridiculous looking.
Yeah. yeah. And it basically is just meant to dilute yeah. the power
and,
of Southern California.
Yeah. And the other thing, just before we get to the next batch
yes.
of primaries, is that. This is a clarion call to all Californians. What are you doing? Go vote.
Yeah, remember
you guys,
vote.
Like, you know, we just talked about like all of the things good that happened here in the sense that like we got all seven Democrats on these tickets with, you know, that we should be winning that Hillary won. You know, like we were happy about De Leon, but like our, you know, if you want, there was a great piece in the LA Times, like the day after or a couple days after, probably as they sort of like figured out what the numbers were or whatever. But they were just basically like, if California wants to be the resistance, they should try voting. I'm pretty sure it was the headline.
Although,
because we classically have bad voter turnout and it's always
it's
upsetting.
Not us.
And
it's all, right. the nation classically
right.
has
well,
bad voter
yes,
turnout.
Well, yes, I know, but ours is worse.
Is it than the nation's?
Oh, yeah, by far. We have like 12% voter turnout.
I would contend that many states have that in primaries.
I don't think that, but, well, I would be curious to look at that too.
Yeah.
You may be right, but like.
I think that's true in New York.
In a primary that was so important
yeah.
that everybody
yeah.
seemed to acknowledge was important, that like I would have thought that most people found important enough to like go, even if it was to only vote for the Democrat, you know, who was might be the person who would advance to the runoff in whatever congressional district you were voting in, you know, like I
yeah.
just it's shocking to me that like we're gonna try and be like, yes, look at us, we're gonna fix everything and we're gonna sweep the Democrats to we're gonna win seven seats, which is a third of what we need to take back the House and this and that, and like, and we don't go? Like, that's not the winning
well,
recipe.
I can tell you why it's the recipe that's happening, though, right now, which is when you shift your most important voting day to a primary day, which is not a national holiday, which sneaks up on everyone and includes, like, 25,000 confusing elections with 34 candidates in them.
Yeah.
You make it hard for people to vote.
You do.
It's like how in West Hollywood, we used to have our city elections in March.
Yeah.
And so it would just like one day in March, you'd be like, what? We're voting on what? Like you'd get all this mail and you'd be like, what the hell is happening here?
This is
here?
Our last year.
We stopped doing that. And we actually spoke to the mayor of West Hollywood about that on this podcast because it was a really ineffective strategy because people didn't realize it was election day and they forgot to vote.
Yes.
And in West Hollywood, people are civically engaged and they are interested in maintaining what we have here in West Hollywood. And it's a relatively wealthy city. So there's plenty of reason for people to be invested. We pay high taxes to live here.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that there were elections a lot of the time happening. And sometimes there would be like three different ones. And we'd be like, what is happening here? This is the problem with having a jungle primary system.
It
is your most important day of voting happens on a random Tuesday in June.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen on November when it's official election day and everyone in the country is voting and we're all doing it.
Yes.
It happens on a random day in June that six other states voted on that aren't even near this state.
Right.
And there's no excitement about it because you don't know what's happening. And there's too many things on the ballot and you have to do all this research because, you know, there's already five props on a primary ballot.
Yeah.
Like, that's a crazy thing to have as our system in a state where we have bad turnout.
Yeah. I agree, but like...
I mean, I understand. There's two there's two pieces to this, because on the one hand, people should take responsibility for voting.
And also just like, it also just, I feel like it's a bad... The thing that annoys me is just that it's like, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not cute.
No, it's not cute.
As they say.
No, we
like when you're sort of like trying to like show the rest of the country like what's happening here. You know what I mean? Like, look at us. We're going to fix it and we're great and wonderful and like you can come here and like we're the sort of like bastion of non-Trumpism and then like nobody goes to vote. It's just like it's like if I were somebody literally anywhere else and like saw those numbers, I would have been like, they can stop telling me what to do immediately.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, we don't want
but
that.
I would
we want to be able to tell everybody what to
do. I would also contend that as a state, we have to decide that we're going to make voting accessible and easy enough so that we can have
You know,
kind
I'm
of. Well, of course.
Yes.
But just saying, like, it's also our responsibility to not make voting so difficult that no one can feel comfortable showing up. As far as the other June 5th primaries, we had Montana, Iowa, and South Dakota. Nothing too exciting happened there.
No.
Democrats got elected in Democratic primaries.
Yes.
Republicans got elected in Republican primaries.
Yes.
New Jersey had a good night for establishment Dems,
ugh,
which a lot of these places did, actually.
Yes.
In New Mexico, they are poised to elect the first Native American woman to serve in Congress.
Yes.
Deb Haaland.
Love that.
They had another district where they think they might be able to take the district back, and their district elected a wacko GOP to run as her opponent, so that's good news.
Yes.
And Alabama has an exciting runoff election happening.
Yes.
There, in July, Martha Roby, the representative there, is... going to be running against Bobby Bright, who is someone who used to be the representative.
Right, and is a former Democrat.
And is a former Democrat, exactly.
It's interesting that
And isn't she the one who backed away from Trump?
Yes, like, that's what is... It's interesting to me that that who is going to be running against her, because they have jungle primaries too, right? I believe, Alabama?
I don't think they do. I think it's just that you have to make 50%.
Oh, that's what it is. So that's a runoff. Yes,
yeah,
you're right.
It's a runoff, yeah.
But it's weird that the person who... she's in a runoff against is not like a real Trump apologist crazy person.
No, I know.
It should be that Roy Moore guy that she was running against.
Exactly.
Right? Because like you've got basically like two, I mean, she's probably not a moderate, but like, I mean, you would assume that Bobby Bright is if he used to be a Democrat. And like she's a person who sort of like disavowed Trump. So that's interesting.
Although if I've learned anything about Alabama in looking extensively into its history during the Doug Jones election era.
Yeah.
It used to be a pretty big Democratic stronghold for sort of like Dixie Dem types.
Oh, yeah.
And so because of that, I feel like it's not hard actually to be a kind of lunatic person who used to be a Democrat. They used to have two Democratic senators there as recently as the
90s. Yeah.
I mean, this is fairly new, this sort of strain of crazy conservatism there. And so I am sort of interested to see what happens here because I'm A, interested in what Bobby Bright actually is all about.
Right. Yeah.
And also I am... like you, surprised to see that the opponent that she's in the runoff with is not the lunatic person in the race. The Roy Moore-esque person in the race.
Yeah.
But is someone, what I presume is to her left.
I would think.
In any case.
Yeah.
We also had primaries on June 12th.
Yeah.
Notable things that happened there. Maine reapproved ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
Interesting switch for my aunt who called me or who emailed me to tell me she was going to vote against ranked choice voting.
Yes.
And then decided to vote for it.
Yes.
She... and her husband, my uncle, voted against it. So they kind of canceled each other out. It was, like with many props, written in a way that no one could understand what it meant.
Sure.
So they were like, well, we'll just cancel each other out. But I asked her specifically why she had changed her mind. And she said, you know, I thought about it and I realized that I didn't, you know, that the right of the voters of Maine to determine this should be respected. That we had already voted to approve this on the ballot as like last time, like very recently.
Yeah.
It's a pet project of LePage to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so she was just like, I didn't think that our will should be ignored that way. And I was like, you know what? Fair.
Yeah.
I get it.
I like it.
In other notable news, Mark Sanford got primaried out in South Carolina after Trump went after him.
Yes. And that's, and I, this was one of my favorite sort of like Trump endorsements too for when he endorsed the other, whoever.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the guy.
Because he referenced his affair.
Yes.
It was like, he belongs in Argentina and not in Congress or something like that. Those weren't his exact words, but do you remember that? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, Trump, get him. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, I don't.
No, wait, don't root for Trump.
But also, like, Mark Sanford has been, like, a popular person for us to reference on this podcast just because we hate him so much. Yeah. And it is sort of, he's, like, one of these deeply upsetting people that has, like, it's shocking to me that he has been, like, allowed and to, like, re-enter politics and, like, accepted by a Republican Party who claims to be the, you know, the Christian Republican, like, sort of, like, pro-family values voters. Because, like, this is a man who, like, was the governor and, like, spent a ton of money, like, going down to Argentina to, like, philander with his mistress. Yeah. So, like, good riddance, Mark Sanford. Yeah. Obviously, whoever won that primary is probably even more terrible than Mark Sanford, so that's not great. But still, I'm not going to miss Mark Sanford. Because, like, he doesn't deserve to be in the House at all. No, he doesn't deserve to be in public life.
There are, like, so many of these Republicans who get these second acts. And
And it's because they're Christians. And because they get to apologize. And, like, they're believed because they're Christians. Because, like, they can be forgiven. But somebody who's not as insanely Christian is, like, they're held to a different accountability because, like, oh, well, Jesus didn't forgive them.
Exactly.
It's like, huh?
Like, David Vitter tried the same thing. I mean, there are so many of these guys.
Yeah.
And when this happens to Democrats, they disappear. I mean, I'm sure they're secretly lobbyists now or whatever.
Right.
But they disappear from electoral politics. When it happens to Republicans, they go to church for a few months.
That's right.
And then they come back and run again for the same office they already had.
Right. And say that they've, you know, asked for forgiveness from their Lord and Savior.
In general, the June 12th primaries, like the June 5th primaries, were mostly mainline Dems. Big establishment wins for the Dems, which is what happens when you have all the money. And then also Trump GOP. It was a big win for Trump's wing of the GOP party. Or the GOP party's redundant. Of the GOP. The grand old party. I don't think that this is ultimately a good thing for Republicans in general, because I don't think that these Trump candidates are going to be as electable outside of stronghold Trump areas.
Yes.
I think when you get into districts that are slightly swingier, you're going to find that white suburban voters are abandoning him. You're going to find that working class voters are like, where's my job? You're going to find that people with hearts are like, why are you separating children from their parents?
Yes.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And then we also had the world in the last 2 weeks.
That's right.
The world was on, was happening.
And it hasn't been going so great in the world.
The world has been a weird place.
Yeah.
It begins with the G7 summit.
Yes.
You might have seen some of the many photographs that were taken of Trump sitting in amidst a gathering of world leaders all standing over him with his arms crossed, looking like an angry toddler from a cartoon.
Yes. You also probably saw Emmanuel Macron really almost break his hand.
Oh my God.
Again.
I cannot get enough of his handshaking strategy.
Oh yeah.
Macron does not fool around.
There were those pictures, did you see?
With his white, imprint?
Yes.
He left an imprint on Trump's hand.
Yes.
That's how hard he handshook him.
Yeah,
I would be terrified to shake hands with Macron.
Yeah.
But I also feel like he's come prepared with a specific Trump strategy.
Yes.
Because there have been...
Nothing flusters Trump more than getting out handshaked.
No, it's so true. And you can see it in his eyes as it's happening.
If you watch this,
it's hilarious.
He knows that he's been had already. And neither of them have even said anything yet.
Yeah. No, it's one of the most amazing pieces of political theater that you'll see from that week. The next week is nothing but political theater. But this week, it's great political theater.
The other photo that you saw is him sitting down and Angela Merkel looking like she might strangle him.
Yeah.
Like, she's while, like, all of the other world leaders over him. Like, look on.
Yeah. She's leaning over him.
And that really...
He looks like Dennis the Menace in the photo, doesn't he?
Yeah. And that really tells you everything that you need to know about the G7. Like, we don't have to tell you any facts. No. Like, look at that picture of Angela Merkel looking at him and all of the other world leaders, and you know everything that happened at the G7 summit.
Well, there's only two facts that you would need to know, even if you were knowing facts.
Yes.
One is that Trump decided he wants it to be the G8 again and include Russia.
Russia can get back in, obviously.
But don't worry, we're not colluding. Don't worry about that. No. The second is that we didn't sign the joint statement that came out of the G7, and it's mostly because we're mad at Canada over a trade war that we're starting with Canada.
Yes. That's right, yeah.
He keeps shit-talking Trudeau, which is like, P.S.
Everybody
be careful
loves Justin Trudeau.
Shit-talking the most handsome leaders.
And everybody in America already wishes that he was our president.
Obviously.
So it's like, you know,
don't give them more reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're like in a weird trade war now with Canada.
Yeah, and
Canada,
it's not even a weird, and China, I believe, too, also. And, you know, it's like...
China, though, he's been shit-talking for years.
He has.
Canada feels like, why bother?
Sure.
Canada is sort of like... Americans, as much as we shit-talk Canada, also think of Canada as part of the U.S.
Yes.
Like, I don't even imagine a world where a trade war with Canada is a
possibility.
I was going
to say, I feel like, starting a trade war with Canada really only gives credence to Canada being a real country.
Right. It's like starting a trade war with Wyoming. Like, I just don't see why we would go there. They are us. They're just us in Canada. They're colder and they're us. Like, it just doesn't... It doesn't compute to me that we would even find a reason to find fault with them. They're so polite.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he has lots of reasons to find fault with them because they're so polite.
I was gonna say,
and their leader is more handsome than him and more TV worthy than him.
Yeah.
For sure. But our trade war with Canada was one of the more head-scratching things about last week. And then this week...
And it's not great either.
It's not a great thing.
It's not going to... It's not going to do the things... Economists are worried about this.
Yeah, like, they should
be. Because This is not fun and games, by the way. Like, we're sort of making it seem like it is because it's ridiculous in obvious ways. But it's also, like, going to negatively impact us.
Yeah.
So it's not great.
No, it's not ideal. It's not an ideal thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like Trump to have unilaterally declared it without thinking. And I also believe that shit-talking Canada, as much as people like to feel like they can shit-talk Canada... doesn't belong to the government. Like, it's like how you can shit-talk your own cousin, but, like, other people can't shit-talk your cousin.
Right.
Or, like, you can shit-talk your mom, but other... You know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We never shit-talk our moms. But, you know, like, Canada, like, belongs to all of us in a sense, but it doesn't belong to the government. That feels like an unfair outside attack.
Yeah.
Whereas it belongs to us to attack Canada.
Yes.
You know, in the same way that, like, it belongs to New Yorkers to attack upstate New York, but it doesn't belong to the mayor of New York to attack upstate New York.
It
belongs to the people of New York. It belongs to the
people
of the U.S. to attack Canadians for being polite and silly.
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to the U.S. government, which is an arguably much more powerful entity,
to punch
down at Canada.
Yeah.
Canada belongs to us.
Yeah.
You know, not them. In any case, Canada is the people's Canada, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure, yes.
The last week... was even wackier than the week before.
Yeah.
We're heavy into diplomacy games in the last couple weeks.
Yes.
But the North Korea summit
finally happened. And as we said, they got along famously.
Of course. I mean, they're
we knew.
It's a match made in heaven.
Yeah. Nothing came of it.
No, of course not.
Even though they claimed that it did, but it didn't.
No,
nothing.
No specifics were agreed upon.
None.
Here's what was agreed upon.
Yeah.
A very theatrical handshake that lasted too long.
Yes.
That
correct.
Had music.
Yep.
And a whole backdrop situation.
Yes.
The White House made their own North Korea propaganda film that the media legitimately thought had come from North Korea until they found out the White House had made it.
Yes.
So the White House, it turns out, is as talented at fascist media making as
which
North Korea.
Which is scary, for starters. But also, you know what? I will hand it to them in that that was probably a good play. Because that's something certainly that he recognized as a great
gesture.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and also, North Korean propaganda is pretty cut and dry. It's not that sophisticated. So, like, it's just up their alley.
It's what
they've been doing this whole time. The Trump administration has been attempting to inception us with North Korean propaganda, essentially, in terms of its tone, this whole time.
That's right. Well, and they
strongman bullshit, and
not even shy about it, because after the fact, Trump was like, I like that all of the North Koreans, like, you know, stand up and honor him. Like, and he was like, I wish that my people would do that. So it's like, he's not even sort of like couching his, like, you know, desire to be a dictator.
Trump is a 70-year-old man who aspires to be a 34-year-old chubby, born-in dictator in a nation that has no food.
Yes.
Like, that is what Trump wants most.
Yeah.
He wants to be Kim Jong-un. He wants to be treated like a god.
Yes, that's right.
And he wants to get the best ratings.
Yes.
Kim Jong-un always gets the best ratings.
Right, because...
Everywhere in North Korea, his ratings are the best.
Right, because if you're not giving him the best ratings, then he'll just kill you.
Yeah, then you die. Exactly. Trump would like the chance to kill anyone right. who is not giving him the best ratings.
Yeah.
So they made a bunch of flimsy promises.
Yes.
They made some vague promises about denuclearization that don't have any content.
Don't have... Yes,
then
exactly.
Trump invited him to the White House for a second date.
Yeah.
And he accepted.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a second date,
yes.
which is also yeah. exciting,
now,
I guess.
I want you to, it was sort of, you know, he went straight from the G7 to this summit.
Singapore,
and
yeah.
I think a lot of people were rightly saying this, but I was sort of, I was glad to see, I believe it was on CNN that I heard the quote. It was from Eric Erickson, who's yeah. as crazy of a Republican
yeah.
as
not who
one
you're hoping.
Can possibly dig up. To say something. And he said something to the effect of, can you imagine a 72 hours wherein President Obama goes and spurns all of our allies, like
oh, yeah.
all literally every one of them, and then flies to make nice to a dictator who's like, you know, killing his people.
It is.
And saluting them.
Oh, right.
Did you see that?
Yes.
I was like, couldn't think. I was saluting Lila here,
right?
I was just like drawing a blank on the word salute.
Because we don't frequently salute here in the U.S. Brent was not accustomed
right,
to thinking in those
right.
terms.
But we also don't typically salute people like Kim Jong-un or his military leaders.
No.
Like, remember when Obama got all that flack for like bowing when he was
yes.
wherever he was bowing?
Was China or somewhere?
I don't know. But anyway, so, you know, I think that anybody who sort of thinks that Trump had a any Republican who thinks that Trump had a good week of diplomacy last week really needs to check themselves
yeah.
because it's too insane.
Right. The only two things that he did of note were advocate for Russia
yeah.
at one authoritarian dictatorship
yeah.
in the G7 with our allies and
yeah.
then go and make nice with the,
yeah.
the leader of North Korea, you
yeah.
guys. North Korea.
Yeah, exactly.
We still don't have diplomatic relations with Cuba. You know?
Right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
They have rolled
right.
back most of
yeah.
our diplomatic relationship with Cuba.
Yeah.
Which is a place that we colonized once.
Yeah.
And also is next door.
Yeah.
But we have flown at this point all the way to Singapore to meet with Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
In a ridiculous country that is built around his fantasy. P.S. I just bought a book that's a memoir about someone going to school in North Korea, like an American guy
oh.
who went and studied in North Korea. I really couldn't be more excited.
Oh my gosh.
You guys know that I'm obsessed with finding out what everyone's up to all day in North Korea.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a sense that I'm suspicious of them, because I'm sure
no.
that there are lovely people in North Korea like
of
there
course.
Are in the world, because all people
yeah.
are people. I'm just always curious what they do that brings them joy.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is it to be
not,
a North Korean person?
Not eat or anything that uses electricity.
Right. Plenty of times not spent around food or electricity.
Right.
But like, people are people everywhere.
Right.
So what is it like in North Korea
right.
to be a person who has an everyday life?
Maybe they're
what's your routine in North
maybe
Korea?
Maybe they're spending a lot of time on the great beaches.
Maybe, yes. I would
yeah.
doubt that the regular people of North Korea are spending any
are.
Time on the great beaches.
No, I don't think
I bet that there are children of the elite who spend
yes.
lots of time on the great beaches
yeah.
And take selfies there.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to say just before we get off of this story is that, you know, again, this was a story where you heard some Republicans not super happy about this and also the G7 summit. But I
yeah.
would just like to remind all of those Republicans, many of whom or probably all of whom voted for Donald Trump, is that totally, like, throwing the world order into disarray was exactly what y'all signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to the point where they basically said as much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly his campaign manager, or
yeah.
Steve Bannon. I mean, like, the man has been writing books and making movies about destroying the world order.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are thinking to yourself, like, God, I can't believe he did that. Why can't you?
Right.
Because
he,
I can.
He promised to.
He promised to.
This
yes,
was
he's
his whole,
doing,
this is his
right,
agenda.
Right. He's finally keeping a campaign promise.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
looks like bumbling, but it's actually the only organized thing he's
yeah.
done.
So, like, shut up
yeah.
with yourself. Like,
yeah.
I mean, sure, complain because it's the right thing to do. But don't act shocked.
No.
Certainly.
No, you voted for, a specific plan was laid out that you voted for that was this.
Right, and now you're getting it.
Now you've,
yeah.
you're getting it.
Yeah.
In final news. As if this week wasn't wacky enough.
Yeah.
Paul Manafort's in jail.
Yeah.
Paul Manafort, by the way, is currently 25% closer to turning, in my estimation.
Oh, more than
he's
that.
He's now at 95% turn, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
I have always said he's going to turn.
Right.
He is not.
Michael Cohen, that much closer, too.
Oh,
we didn't pull a story about that, but he doesn't have representation any longer.
Yeah, he fired his lawyers, and now he's just, like, freewheeling it over. Like, he's obviously actually turning.
Yes.
Paul Manafort was always the only holdout in this sort of scheme, this world of people that were, like, you know, the George Papadopoulos genre of people who were, like, prosecuted for whatever and hadn't pled guilty yet.
Yeah. But it turns out you can't be witness tampering.
No. It turns out that if they let you off on bail and then you go around witness tampering, they'll put you back in jail.
Yes.
And that's what they've done to Paul Manafort.
Exactly
now, if you want to be witness tampered at your own accord, at your own convenience, you can still visit him in jail because they, for
the
some
Washington
reason,
Post.
Published his visiting schedule.
Right. It's Fridays from
2:15
to 3:15 p.m. At the Northern Neck Jail in Warsaw, Virginia.
Yeah. It sounds nice there.
Yes,
it's a VIP jail that's housed many fancy people.
Yes, that's right. There's members of ISIS there. Michael Vick was there.
Chris Brown
was there. Yes. There's a Colombian drug lord.
Yeah.
So, people... There's been a lot of people there. It's also apparently been maybe bad news for Paul Manafort, where the jail where you go to die.
Yeah, a lot of weird deaths happening in that jail.
Weird deaths there, like to the point of like, and not like because they were just so old they died in prison, but like where a 32-year-old female inmate suffered a stroke in 2016 and then was denied medical care for more than 10 hours.
And then
they had to do a huge payout to the family because they were sued. And there's a couple other people have committed suicide in there. And so this is maybe for, you know, yes, he's in the VIP section, so that's great for him. You did it. You're a very important person.
Right.
In jail, Paul Manafort. But like also, you might die soon.
Right.
So.
And if he makes it for the next 3 months awaiting trial...
Yeah.
I believe he will also, at that point, have gotten a plea deal from Mueller.
100%.
Because this is not a man who wants the rest of his life to be spent getting involved with foreign governments from jail.
If anything will tell you that you don't want to spend the rest of your life in jail, it's going to jail.
Yes, that's so true. VIP jail doesn't sound awesome.
Yeah. Because if you don't go to jail now for these 3 months, jail is just sort of only... a feeling.
Right. That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And if you're Paul Manafort, you're like, you know what? I can probably handle jail. Like, I can do it. Like, I hope that I don't have to. I'm going to plead not guilty. I'm going to do this. I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to have good representation.
Right.
But 3 months in jail, I think, is probably going to inform that decision.
Yes. So true. I don't see Paul Manafort being the kind of guy who can handle himself in a scenario where brawn is needed. You know?
No.
Like,
I mean, he's a big guy.
He's a big guy.
Yeah.
He looks a little dopey.
For sure.
I bet he's thrown a punch.
Oh, probably,
I mean, he's been in Eastern Europe this whole time. People
for
are throwing
a long time.
Punches there a lot.
That's what you do.
In Ukraine, I feel like punches are being thrown constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you make millions of dollars in Ukraine, you
you've
probably had to... You might have killed somebody.
I just, like, don't see this being the environment that he is best suited to. Maybe he'll, maybe he'll come out of himself.
I mean, 2 years ago, he was, like, you know, he was running a presidential campaign.
Right.
So, like, this is not his speed here.
No. And I don't think there's going to be enough of an opportunity to be engaged in various kinds of mercenary turncoat activities, which is what his first love is, from jail. I think it's going to be hard to represent a foreign government and mislead the American government about your actions there.
Right.
From jail.
Right.
From a federal
facility. Right, because even if you're out of jail, and even though you're about to be charged with a bunch of federal crimes, you can still get up to fun things like witness tampering.
Right, exactly.
Once you're in jail, all of those fun things are out
those
the window.
Witnesses have to come to you on Fridays between 2:15 and 3:15 if you want to be tampering with them.
That's right.
So
yeah,
it gets harder.
Ooh, boy.
In any case, that's the news this week.
There it is.
We'll be back in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But keep an eye on our social media because we will be keeping you up to date on the various other news of the weeks.
That's right.
In between then.
Yeah.
And if something exciting happens...
We'll tell you.
We'll tell you. All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.